Soon he detected in her a wonderful reticence. She was like a woman of Leonardo da Vinci's, whom we love not so much for herself as for the things that she will not tell us. She did develop most wonderfully day by day. So it happened that from patronizing civility he had slowly passed, if not to passion, at least to a profound uneasiness. Already at Rome he had hinted to her that they might be suitable for each other. Her refusal had been clear and gentle. 3 months later, among the flower-clad Alps, he had asked her again in bald, traditional language. She reminded him of a Leonardo more than ever. Her sunburnt features were shadowed by fantastic rock. At his words, she had turned and stood between him and the light, with immeasurable plains behind her. He walked home with her, unashamed, feeling not at all like a rejected suitor. The things that really mattered were unshaken. So now he had asked her once more, and clear and gentle as ever, she had accepted him, simply saying that she loved him and would do her best to make him happy. His mother, too, would be pleased. She had counseled the step. He must write her a long account. He moved to the writing table. There he saw, "Dear Mrs. Vyse," followed by many erasures. He recoiled without reading any more, and after a little hesitation sat down elsewhere and penciled a note on his knee. Then he lit another cigarette, which did not seem quite as divine as the first, and considered what might be done to make Windy Corner drawing room more distinctive.
"Mr. Beebe," said the maid, and the new rector of Summer Street was shown in.
Cecil greeted him rather critically.
"I've come for tea, Mr. Vyse. Do you suppose that I shall get it?"
"I should say so. Don't sit in that chair. Young Honeychurch has left a bone in it."
"Phew!"
"I know," said Cecil. "I can't think why Mrs. Honeychurch allows it."
"I've come for tea and for gossip. Isn't this news?"
"News? I don't understand you," said Cecil.
"News?"
Mr. Beebe, whose news was of a very different nature, prattled forward.
"I met Sir Harry Otway as I came up. I have every reason to hope that I'm first in the field. He has bought Sissy and Albert from Mr. Flack."
"Has he indeed?" said Cecil, trying to recover himself. Into what a grotesque mistake had he fallen? Was it likely that a clergyman and a gentleman would refer to his engagement in a manner so flippant? But his stiffness remained, and though he asked who Sissy and Albert might be, he still thought Mr. Beebe rather a bounder.
"Unpardonable question! To have stopped a week at Windy Corner and not to have met Sissy and Albert, the semi-detached villas that have been run up opposite the church?"
"I'm shockingly stupid over local affairs," said the young man languidly. "I only go into the country to see my friends and to enjoy the scenery. It is very remiss of me. Italy and London are the only places where I don't feel to exist on sufferance."
Mr. Beebe, distressed at this heavy reception of Sissy and Albert, determined to shift the subject.
"Let me see, Mr. Vyse. I forget. What is your profession?"
"I have no profession," said Cecil. "It is another example of my decadence. My attitude, quite an indefensible one, is that so long as I am no trouble to anyone, I have a right to do as I like."
"You are very fortunate," said Mr. Beebe. "It is a wonderful opportunity, the possession of leisure."
His voice was rather parochial, but he did not quite see his way to answering naturally. He felt, as all who have regular occupation must feel, that others should have it also.
"I am glad that you approve. I daren't face the healthy person, for example, Freddy Honeychurch."
"Oh, Freddy's a good sort, isn't he?"
"Admirable. The sort who has made England what she is."
Cecil wondered at himself. Why, on this day of all others, was he so hopelessly contrary?
"Where are the others?" said Mr. Beebe at last. "I insist on extracting tea before evening service."
I suppose Anne never told them you were here. In this house, one is so coached in the servants the day one arrives. The fault of Anne is that she begs your pardon when she hears you perfectly, and kicks the chair legs with her feet. The faults of Mary... I forget the faults of Mary, but they are very grave.
I know the faults of Mary. She leaves the dustpans standing on the stairs.
They both laughed, and things began to go better.
The faults of Freddy, Cecil continued, ah, he has too many. No one but his mother can remember the faults of Freddy. Try the faults of Miss Honeychurch. They are not innumerable.
She has none, said the young man, with grave sincerity.
I quite agree. At present, she has none.
At present?
I'm not cynical. I'm only thinking of my pet theory about Miss Honeychurch. Does it seem reasonable that she should play so wonderfully and live so quietly? I suspect that one day she will be wonderful in both. The watertight compartments in her will break down, and music and life will mingle.